Archly is the trusted partner for parsing, matching, and data enrichment, helping companies hire better talent faster. Archly offer innovative solutions built for the future of technology and recruiting to ATS, job boards, staffing agencies, and enterprises. They help you connect candidates with jobs by enhancing candidate experience, simplifying the hiring process, reducing hiring costs, saving time and money. Archly also has its multilingual resume parsing app available on Oracle Cloud Marketplace and Salesforce App Exchange. For more information, visit www.archly.com.
What great ideas are so close within your grasp? Seeing other points of view, anticipating change, considering multiple possible turnouts, acknowledging uncertainty, searching for compromise. We're going to talk about how to get over those limiters of innovation so that you can extract better thinking from yourself and your team. So let's talk about how to win the future.
Welcome to the Marketing Rules podcast from Think in Circles with me, your host, James Whitelock. We've talked a lot about AI on the Marketing Rules podcast, from how it can be used in volume marketing to increasing talent engagement. But do we need to stop and think if we're using AI responsibly? Joining me this week is Bob Pulver, founder of Cognitive Path. Bob discusses how we should be using AI in the talent acquisition space. What type of governance and security should we have in place? And what is the current landscape of AI usage in talent acquisition? Welcome back, everybody, to the Marketing Rules podcast. It's my pleasure to have Bob Pulver joining me today. Bob, I've seen a ton of your content online, and that's what made me reach out and why I wanted to have you on the podcast. But for those who haven't seen your great content, maybe you can give us a bit about your background and what you do now.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, James. So my background is with large enterprise. So I worked at IBM for over 20 years, and then 3.5 years at NBC Universal, part of the Comcast conglomerate. And it was there that I started. And so I was really at the intersection, I would say, of transformation and innovation. But a lot of that stretched into, you know, talent-related things, even though I never had an HR role in those companies. And what I mean by that is I was involved in employee experience. I was involved in social analytics, trying to understand people's behavior, the way knowledge flowed around an organization, as well as, you know, with the advent of social media, how people were sort of representing themselves online, early days of, you know, influencers back, you know, maybe 15 years ago. It was really also a lot of crowdsourcing and collective intelligence initiatives. Some of these were related to my day job. Some of them were sort of extracurricular kinds of projects. At NBC, when I was working as a chief of staff to an engineering executive, I got involved in a lot of the hiring. So not necessarily just full-time hiring, but contract hiring, working with talent acquisition, working with vendor management, staffing agencies, doing interviewing, conducting the interview, you know, schedules. So I was sort of, I guess, acting hiring manager, recruiting coordinator, recruiter, sourcer, all of those things all at once without ever actually having any of those titles, which is why I think the demise of the resume needs to come, because it's just not a good representation of the things that I've done personally. But anyway, I really got a keen interest in what I saw as some of the opportunities, I'll call them, in talent acquisition, more broadly, not just, you know, what exists on the TA teams, you know, plate these days, but just really thinking about people's potential. How do we more accurately, you know, identify, you know, talent and their potential to be successful? So I was, you know, certainly very encouraged with a lot of the AI-based solutions I've seen over the last couple of years. We're trying to improve, you know, the core concept of matchmaking, which is where things tend to go awry in recruiting. And So I just started, you know, I jumped into the talent space with both feet, focused a lot on the technology side and how can we use technology to sort of complement or augment, you know, human behavior and human activity, and, you know, how can we sort of optimize that balance between is man and machine is one way, one old school way to put it. So that's where I am. And more recently started an advisory practice focused at that intersection of talent and technology, and specifically, how AI has permeated seemingly almost every facet of technology, and HR tech and talent tech is certainly no exception.
And we're going to kind of touch on that today. So we're going to talk a little bit around kind of responsible use of AI within the kind of talent acquisition and staffing space. Because I guess in most people's minds, especially if you're on that side, it feels a little bit like the Wild West, right? From a technology perspective, everybody kind of classing themselves as AI, and probably having no real kind of backup to say it is actually AI. And also the, where is it getting all this? Where is it learning, right? Where's the data that's training all this stuff? Where's all that coming from? And hopefully helping us in the TA space and staffing space to be more responsible, right? What do we need to know when we're looking at these kind of AI tools? Because it feels like, on a daily basis, there's loads of them just dropping into our inboxes saying, we do this. So let's kind of start at the beginning. When we're talking about responsible use of AI, what does that look like, right? Where do we start when we're talking about this?
Yeah, I like how you framed that question, because it actually does start when these tools are being conceived, when they're being built, right? Because I think that's especially true with the models that the business models that a lot of companies are using, which is really, based on data. How much, insight, how much novel insight can we extract from data? How much data can we continually collect from users, from data aggregators? To your point, where is all this coming from? And are people asking that very question? And it shouldn't take, a government regulator to, or knock on the door from people you aren't expecting and don't want to see, to start asking those questions. Because if you can't trust the data, then how are you going to trust the algorithm that was based on it? So I think this is where a lot of companies have gotten themselves into trouble in the past, not necessarily in the TA space, but there's certainly been examples of that where, it turned out when someone went in, there was clearly, bias in, the machine generated, recommendations or whatever the output was, but you could clearly see that there was, adverse impact against a particular, protected category, or maybe something that doesn't have sufficient, legal protections. But clearly the human bias that has existed in any historical data set can very easily make its way into some of these algorithms if people are not looking at that as they're building these systems. So it's really in the life cycle of data from, when it's collected all the way to, when it's used to make a decision. You really need to look at that entire sort of lifespan. And so for, in the talent space, that goes back to where are you getting all these contact details? Where are you getting all these resumes? What's the algorithm that you use to assess, skills and competence, based on those resumes?
The kind of follow-up question is around that, and this is maybe with my cynical head on. Yep. Do the people, the users of these systems, one, do they care? I know we're talking about responsible use of AI, but there's a point where it's responsible on the tech providers to kind of, for good governance and compliance. Yep. And there's also the part of the users, right, to be questioning about this and whether they actually care. As a business that works in the staffing and recruitment space, we've all met recruiters who just, I just want lots and lots of candidates or CV. I'm not really too care. I don't care too much where they've come from. So there's a responsibility on the other side as well, right?
Yeah. I think there's, first of all, I think there's a fundamental foundation of trust that we need, and that's a two-way street, right? So it's really, you know, employees need to, and candidates need to trust that organizations are being ethical in the way that they collect data. So did I explicitly give you permit? Did I apply to a job and that's why you have all this information? Did I apply to someone else's job and somehow it wound up, you know, in your database and now you're outreaching to me? Or, you know, what was the sort of path that was taken? But I think everyone, this is a shared responsibility. Yeah. So I think that's one of the important things about responsible AI. It's not just, can I trust the AI? It's, can I trust all the human beings that have interacted with it, built it, used it, trained it, all of that. So I think that's, you know, I don't know if I would call it upskilling, or it's more, people are going to hate me if I say you need more compliance training, but, you know, when I think about data privacy, you know, we've been down this road, right? This isn't new territory in that sense, right? Data privacy, cybersecurity, all kinds of other training you do when you're onboarded and then perhaps annually or whatever the frequency, appropriate frequency is for a particular type of training. But I do think this is really important because you have, it's not just mutual trust. It's a weakest link kind of situation, right? It just takes one person to, you know, build an algorithm and disseminate it without going through those kinds of checks. And so to your point, I do think there's a responsibility on the vendor for exactly that reason. And when I think about the HR tech market, you know, a lot of these startups are, you know, ex-recruiters. They've been in the industry, they've been in the trenches, and they know what it's like on the user side. They know how, you know, recruiters and sourcers are incentivized. And so if speed is paramount, you know, at what cost?
Mm-hmm. So, and I guess it's also one of those things that this gets very difficult, I guess, within larger organizations, because if you've got, you know, TA teams or even just a few people in your TA team, the likelihood that one of them may well go rogue and just kind of start using something off their own back because they've been part of a group or something, and they said, oh, we should all try this. So the responsibility, I guess, is individual, right, to be questioning, but it goes way higher into these businesses now, right? I guess larger businesses have got to have almost like AI compliance teams or someone in there that's kind of, you know, manages the rollout and kind of authorizes this, and someone who has oversees governance of this, right?
Exactly right. So as part of some of the training that I've gone through as I'm advising clients on this topic, I do have a certification from a nonprofit to actually conduct audits, to learn about what it means to be an independent auditor, what kinds of things are being audited, what kinds of structures and frameworks you need internally to make sure that, you know, you've got policies in place that are appropriate for exactly what you do and the functions that are going to use that technology. So there is a whole sort of governance framework. There's actually a bunch of different ones. I partner with a particular nonprofit who has gone through an accreditation with all these, you know, regulatory bodies to, you know, provide education and issue certifications for, you know, who can conduct an audit in, you know, eventually there'll be one for the EU AI Act. Right now I have my certification for my baseline certification for independent auditing of these systems. And then I have the New York City anti-bias certification, and I'll continue to add those badges to my profile as it were. But yeah, that's one of the sort of foundational things, is how do you make sure that you don't just pass an audit today. In New York City, that audit is annual, but you know, as your models change, as they, you know, ingest more data and they learn, and the models can drift, as they say. Mm-hmm. So if you have model drift and you have candidates constantly coming in, to your ATS and it's constantly sort of refiltering or whatever, part of the audit actually says, well, what candidates came through what algorithm, and let's check and make sure that there wasn't adverse impact, you know, amongst that group for the categories that are protected in New York City, for example.
Yeah.
But the other thing, just to tie back to one of the things you said before about, you know, the vendor responsibility. So with New York City legislation, the onus is actually on the user of the technology, so on the client side. But you would hope that if you were an HR tech vendor building some type of solution like that, that you would probably be using it yourself in your own hiring, and therefore you're on the hook, you know, to pass that audit one way or the other.
Yeah.
You should also probably do it whether you were using it yourself or not, because you want to assure all your clients and prospects that you're taking responsible AI and trustworthy AI seriously. And so I don't think you really have much of a choice, on top of the fact that the EU is not going to let the vendors off the hook in that region. So you really, you know, what's the lowest common denominator? Why not just do it responsibly, to the strictest, you know, sort of guidance or anticipated, you know, legislation, which right now is probably going to be the EU. And then you're good. And then you're good. If you can pass an EU AI, you know, audit, then you could probably pass it anywhere, at least from what I've seen to date. But, you know, right now it's tough because, to your point about the governance structures, it's not just having it in place. It's that new legislation is cropping up like weeds, you know, all over the globe. It's happening all over the US. There's at least, you know, a dozen, 15 states that have some type of legislation coming. So New York City was sort of the canary in the coal mine, but, you know, California, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, I mean, everyone's got something. Sometimes it's about hiring. Sometimes it's also includes promotions or layoffs. It could include, you know, facial recognition and whether that's allowed in hiring, because it just, screams that there's going to be some bias.
Well, picking up on that, and this is the term bias you've used on numerous a couple of times now, because that was and you kind of alluded to this as well. You know previous kind of iterations of AI, you know, have taken the bias of the programmers basically, and that has been an issue. But where do we sit today when it comes to kind of AI usage and bias? Is that still, you know, built in, or is it way better than it was? Is it something we still need to be kind of careful about? You know, you've obviously got a lot of experience, so kind of give us a snapshot of how it is today.
Yeah, so today, I think it's initiatives and I don't know if I would call this a movement, but it's trends like this around, you know, risk management and, you know, anti-discriminatory, you know, policies, adverse impact against protected categories of, you know, race, gender. In some regions, it'll be, you know, age, disability, things like that. New York City happens to only be gender and race. And that's for hiring and promotion decisions. So one of the challenges is, you know, the legislations have not been in place, and therefore it's not that nothing's been in place. I mean, in the US, we've got existing civil rights, you know, legislation and, you know, gender protections going back probably 50 years, 60 years. Mm-hmm. So, so it's not that nothing's in place, but, the problem with these AI tools, well, some would say it's not a problem at all, but it can hyper-accelerate, you know, some of that bias. So at an organization, you may have, you know, a couple hiring managers that have perhaps more bias than the average, you know, hiring manager, but it's still sort of these one-off things, and maybe people don't recognize the pattern, or, oh, just stay away from that group. You know, these guys work in one of these other groups or whatever. The problem with AI is, you know, it's ability to, you know, sort of the scalability of those decisions. So if you haven't sort of corrected for that as you've built the systems, then you're going to wind up in the headlines for all the wrong reasons, right? And it's going to come, you know, later after the fact, and they're going to have to go do, you know, some root cause and some investigative work to go back. But I think more and more companies and a lot of the vendors that I've seen on the, you know, these people have been audited kind of list. A lot of them are the HR tech vendors, because they know they need to get ahead of this, and they want to be not just responsible and ethical, they want to be proactive. And I think over the next 6 months, as we kick off, you know, 2024, especially leading to when the New York City legislation goes into full effect, like you're supposed to be audited by July 5th of this year if you're using what they call an automated employment decision tool. So if it's anything that's stack ranking or grading or giving a score to candidates and then filtering candidates out based on that score, that's an automated employment decision tool.
So kind of circling back to, you know, where we started around kind of responsible AI, if we're, you know, an employer, if we're, you know, an in-house recruitment team, or we're, you know, what are the questions that we should be asking, right, ourselves and vendors, AI kind of tooling vendors, you know, to make sure that we are, to make sure we're asking the right questions around kind of being a responsible kind of AI user or using of this tech. So, you know, is there kind of a set you would say, look, these are the things you must be asking to get kind of the best, you know, so you're compliant as far as you can be?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the conversations I've had are with folks that really want to assess this as you're down selecting your vendors, right? So there's a whole set of questions that you can ask within your RFI, your RFP, you know, process as you're evaluating vendors. If you're talking to, you know, a market researcher or an analyst or, you know, an advisor like myself, you know, I think that has to be a set of criteria that you know, by which you evaluate some of these vendors. So, you know, all else being equal, if it's just down to, you know, price, you know, slightly cheaper price versus someone who's been independently, you know, audited, I just think it's giving sort of a new importance and almost a new definition to what it means to be a trusted partner. Mm-hmm. And I use that in a broad context, whether it's a partner, you know, client, you know, consultant, whoever. But no matter how many bells and whistles the tool has, if it's grabbing, like, let's talk about contact, you know, details, right? Like, you look at some of these AI-based, you know, sourcing tools, you know, a lot of the competitive sort of differentiation from the vendors that I've spoken to, it's about, well, you know, your outreach is never going to work if you don't have accurate contact details. Well, that's great. So now we're just comparing the accuracy of contact details, or the refresh rate of contact details. Is it going out and getting new information if emails change or da da da?
Yeah.
But I mean, if that's the only benchmark, then you could wind up getting yourself into trouble. Maybe you have the most accurate contact details because you're getting it by scraping, you know, sites that you weren't really, you know, ethically supposed to do, maybe even, you know, legally, you know, supposed to do. So there's a trade-off, right? And so I think, you know, every organization is going to have to weigh their sort of risk, you know, tolerance. But if it still just comes down to, you know, if you're competing on price, or that's all that, you know, the powers that be, you know, care about, you know, I'll give you this budget, so go out and do the best you can. And I don't know. I just think you've got to elevate the importance of, you know, that trusted data in your evaluation. So I don't want to put that. It's not that, you know, the average recruiter shouldn't, you know, question those kinds of things, but they may not have a voice in the purchasing decision. I think it really goes back to who is taking the most pragmatic approach to, you know, vendor selection, and also thinking about their vendors' sort of ecosystem. Like, who are they? Who are their key partners? Where are their primary, you know, integrations and things like that? Because again, it goes back to sort of this talent, this data, you know, supply chain or this life cycle of data. If it's flowing through a whole bunch of systems, and that's going to happen even easier nowadays with different, you know, generative AI tools and agents and co-pilots and stuff like that. You're just issuing a command, maybe even verbally, right? And it's just going off. And now the data, you have no idea whether the data went through two systems or 12, right? So if any of those things, you know, break down, and somebody comes in and does an audit and they want to see how that all transpired, you know, it could be problematic.
Yeah. And Len, from the kind of vendor side, you know, obviously, I mean, I know you can speak from a United States kind of perspective. You know, I assume that over time there's going to be like a badge that says, you know, we are certified, you know, we're ethical, you know, this kind of thing. And, you know, that's the gold standard, right? I guess that's where we're heading with all of this, right?
Yeah, I guess the tricky part is how many of these badges do we need? How prominently are they featured on different sites? Yeah. So today, once you've been independently audited, you are supposed to publish your little, you know, I guess virtual, you know, plaque or some, you know, statement that says we've gone through this independent audit. Here's the name of the auditor or the name of the audit, you know, firm that did it, the date that it was done. So that is supposed to be part of public record. So if I was doing the audit, I would keep my version of those records, and then the company would publish that. And they also have to put on their career site, they have to state. So if they state whether or not they passed an audit, and then they have to, for candidates who are applying, if you're using one of these automated employment decision tools, you actually have to tell them that at the beginning of their application and give them an alternate path to apply. So there's supposed to be an opt out. I don't want AI reviewing my application kind of thing. And you go through the back door, so to speak.
And, couldn't that be kind of biased in its own right, though? You know what I mean? Like, you could be putting yourself into a black hole without even, you know, by opting out of using it.
You're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right. I would say it'll be interesting. I don't think there's enough data on it yet, but, you know, a year from now, we could be having a conversation about how, you know, some of these, you're going to look at the AI, I don't want to call them naysayers, but people who are skeptical about AI making any form or even influencing a decision as it relates to their qualifications. Already, I think people are concerned and are showing their own preference for whether they want AI or a human to evaluate their application. Some people are fine with it because they think, well, this should mitigate, you know, some of the human bias that I've been experiencing. Maybe you're an old guy like me and you think that someone's, they're showing age, you know, discrimination, or they're likely to show age discrimination. So why not let the AI, you know, do it? Because if somebody built the algorithm, you know, properly, they would, you know, hopefully it would not put a lot of weight on someone's, you know, tenure. But I don't know. I think time will tell. But I think the way I see candidates applying to jobs now, where they'll just apply to almost anything, or they'll even use their own AI tool that they've stumbled upon and just mass apply. Mm-hmm. That's obviously going to be difficult if you have every application trying to go through, you know, the alternate.
It's a crazy potential future, because we've talked about this on the podcast a couple of times, where the candidates have got their own AI agents applying for everything. It's just AIs talking to other AIs. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. It has been incredibly insightful. And it's great to talk about AI without actually having to dig into what, you know, into the technicalities of it, which usually I get kind of lost in the weeds at that point. We'll obviously include all of your details on the show notes. If anybody wants to know more about you and your consultancy, and if they want to reach out, they can there. But Bob, for now, thank you very much.
Thank you, James. This was great.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Marketing Rules podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcasting platforms. I've been your host, James Whitelock, and I hope you can join me and more amazing guests next time. The Marketing Rules podcast is a Think in Circles production.